to the Irish NFL Show. My name is Shane Brennan, and thank you very much for joining us. And I'm delighted to be joined from the beautiful city of Boston, Massachusetts, by Chris Mason, who is a Patriots writer at Mass Live, to talk all things New England. We're after experiencing the end of the Dynasty Series. We're looking ahead towards the draft and free agency. Chris, is this time of year kind of busy for you? Is the Dynasty kind of added another layer as to the work you've been doing over the last while?
The Dynasty has a little bit, but mercifully, we got advanced screenings. So in the dead area, like right after the Super Bowl in February, I was able to watch a bunch of those and write some stuff ahead of time. So it's definitely added to it, but March is always a crazy time of year with free agency and everything else going on.
Yeah, and we'll dig into the free agency and I guess the roster conversation that the Patriots need to have in the next while later on. But I'm going to focus on the Dynasty Series. I think I'm right in saying the final two episodes aired over the Friday just gone. I finished watching them earlier over the weekend. And one thing that has struck me and has struck a lot of people is the negative light in which Bill Belichick is portrayed in the series, which differentiates a bit from the book, I think. The book goes and goes into more detail on a lot of the planning, a lot of the, I guess, what made Bill Belichick successful eventually. Whereas there's a lot of areas in the series, whether it be talking around Aaron Hernandez, talking around the deteriorating relationship with Tom Brady, where the series definitely takes a line that Bill Belichick is seen in a negative way. And a lot of players have come out and said that that's not what they like, that's not what they talked about in the series. What was your take on it when you were watching it? Did you think that it was unfair on Bill, or do you think that it was a reflection of what people actually thought at the time, that this was genuine drama and that Bill Belichick was seen as a Marmite type of character? Some people loved him, some people didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely airs on the negative side with him. There's no doubt about that. And some of that is he doesn't really want to participate in it, right? And then, you know, they have those long shots of him just staring into the camera. But that's who Bill's always been, you know? And I think that's part of this whole thing where, like, I don't think Bill really changed from the beginning of the Dynasty to the end of it. I think he coached the same way. I think at a certain point, Tom started to change, right? Tom wanted more freedom. Tom wanted to do things differently. Bill was very, like, steadfast in being Bill and being like, no, we're doing this way. Your trainer's not coming into the building. Like, we have our strength staff, yada, yada, yada. So I think Bill's kind of like the same Bill that he's always been. But as Brady grew, eventually Bill was just like, you know, they're going to butt heads. That's the nature of it. And I did think it was interesting, just like some of the editorial selections in the Dynasty, like the way they glossed over Super Bowls 38 and 39. It's called the Dynasty, and they have those two Super Bowls are on screen for maybe 5 minutes. And then there's like entire episodes devoted to each of the respective controversies. I think some of that, like, inherently makes Bill look worse by what they've done, you know? Like, how could it not?
Yeah, I was saying when the series first came out that what I really wanted to learn is I wanted to learn why the Patriots were so successful. Because we never saw any form of dynasty in the NFL, or probably even in wider American sports, that kept so strong and so dominant for so long. I mean, this is kind of a dynasty in two parts. So at the you know, the 2000s era of, you know, Teddy Bruschi and Will McGinnis, then the 2010s. And like you said, a lot of it kind of focus on the off-field dramatics and, you know, Spygate, Deflategate, Aaron Hernandez, all that kind of thing. And I'm not quite sure I learned why the Patriots were successful. It just kind of, it seemed to show off in a way that almost as if a lot of the success wasn't earned or it was lucky. There's even talk around the fact that that the Crafts may have involved themselves in the making of the series to make themselves look a bit better. So there's a lot of stuff around it. And the reason I'm kind of talking about this is because Devin McCourty came out and said that he was in New York for 6 hours and talked to the makers of the program and said a lot of things about the great Bill Belichick stories. Obviously, Devin McCourty being a defensive player and the X's and O's and stuff like that. And the only time we've really seen that being shown as this is Belichick, the defensive genius, was when they were talking about the Super Bowl 53 win. Against the Los Angeles Rams. So I don't know whether that's just TV trying to make sure it's good drama, which is fair enough, or whether it was just somebody tinkering around with the series try and make themselves look a little bit better.
Yeah, so first, from the Kraft perspective, I mean, this book is based on the Dynasty, the book, where Jeff Benedict, the author, was given unbelievable access to everything through Robert Kraft. Kraft is the one that had him at his house. Kraft was the one giving him all of this stuff. So I think inherently that book is written in a with a pro Kraft slant to it, right? Because he's the guy that's given him all this access. So then you add the TV element where it feels like there needs to be even more drama. You have another director who comes from the outside and is like, oh, well, this is like salacious and interesting and going to dive into that. And it just kind of inherently happens that way. But the thing that really jumped out to me from Devin's comments about it were that obviously they went in on the Trump stuff. And, you know, Devin says that Bill, he felt bamboozled when he wrote him the letter and they do all this stuff. But Devin also talked about how Bill grew a lot with social issues to the point where there was a gentleman who Devin thought was wrongfully convicted and did a lot of work to get him out of jail early. It was like a wrong place, wrong time, but it was a big social justice cause here. And Bill was huge in helping to get this man released. They don't include that part in the series. They just include the first part, right? Where they're slamming him for being stunted. And that's, as a journalist, that's like not really journalism, right? When you start picking and choosing things like that and you're going that route. But it's entertainment. That's ultimately like what people are looking for, I guess. And I mean, the series as it is entertaining, but it just, there's some things that like, I don't know, they don't come out looking perfect. Don't come out looking great.
Yeah, you were mentioning there about the quality of journalism. And like you said, it's an entertainment series. It is what it is. It's, you know, it differs from, I guess, what even if it, whatever 10 episode series you make was never going to fully encapsulate the full story. Before I move on from this, I think I was listening to Mike Florio yesterday, and he kind of suggested or insinuated that with Bill Belichick, obviously he's not a head coach at the moment. None of the teams he interviewed with, I believe he interviewed with the Falcons twice, took him on. Yeah. I imagine he still wants to get out there and coach. He might be sitting around hoping that something comes up in the 2025 season. But do you think that this series has maybe will make it more difficult for Belichick to win over a fan base to support him and say, we want him as our coach?
I don't really. And I think on the flip side, if Bill starts doing TV for a bit next season, I think that'll slant everything more in his favor because he can be very personable and very charismatic when he wants to be. And you saw a little of that with the college game day for the Army-Navy game at Gillette Stadium last year where he's up there. He has the helmet on. Everyone's going crazy. Like, he can really lean into that. And he was like that when they did the NFL 100 series a couple years ago. He was very insightful, very on point. And so I think that if he starts doing TV, which it looks like he's going to for a bit, I think that's going to sway things back towards like relatable Bill. And so I don't think the dynasty itself is going to have like a long-term impact on whether he gets another job. I mean, I think really at its crux, the thing that's killing him in terms of trying to get another job is the Patriots roster right now and the way he left it and whether he wants total control over everything moving forward. You know, I think that stuff is why he doesn't have a job right now. It's not because he can't coach or because he's, you know, a pretty hard-nosed coach.
Yeah, that is one big thing, the fact that he has pretty much had it his own way in New England for so long and it worked well and it all of a sudden didn't work well. And I think it kind of leads us on to talk about the Patriots roster because there hasn't been, it's wrong to say there has been no moves, but I think there is a sense of frustration that there haven't been any big money moves. Of course, the kind of big thing that happened recently was KJ Osborne was signed in the last couple of days. Austin Hooper, tight end, was signed after Mike Gesicki was let go. But there hasn't been any kind of marquee signings just yet. And when we see what's happening in Pittsburgh, when we see what's happening in a few other teams around the league, it seems that the Patriots aren't rushing into their rebuild. They are taking their time to figure out who they want. Do you think this is the right approach, or is it maybe a knock-on effect, the fact that they haven't, that they're basically living with a de facto general manager at the moment, that they haven't hired anybody in that position yet?
Well, it's interesting where it would all make sense that like, okay, they're taking the really slow route with this and they know that they're going to be pragmatic and all this stuff. If they hadn't offered Calvin Ridley $22 million reportedly, like that's the annual offer. So they tried to make a big splash with Ridley and missed and ultimately drew a line somewhere where they were outbid by Tennessee. But the fact that they're swimming in those waters speaks to the fact that they know that they really need a big time acquisition. I think Elliot Wolf of the NFL Combine said something really similar where he said, we know we have to weaponize the offense, right? And while guys like Austin Hooper, KJ Osborne, those are nice signings. They're going to help you. That's not weaponizing your offense. So I do think that like you're seeing the slow build now, but they're still very cognizant that they need to make bigger moves at some point. And like diving in on Ridley like that, I think was eye-opening, where the fact that they're in that conversation speaks to them knowing that they really need to add a number one receiver.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially when you consider the fact that the Patriots have, you know, quite a decent amount of cap space to work with, especially if you compare it to situations in Buffalo and Miami. The Patriots have the space to work with. They have the money sitting there. They just didn't need to find places to put it in. But I'm not quite sure whether they just have a full-on direction as to what they want to do. I don't think they're going to sign any big running backs because they're still trying to get something out of
Ramondre Stevenson, yeah.
Yeah, they don't want to.
And they added Antonio Gibson, who's like a nice depth signing. I think he'll be more of a pass catching back there too. But again, these aren't like the marquee moves. These aren't the big ticket moves that, you know, I think when Gerard Mayo said that the Patriots are going to burn some cash this offseason, right? This is not what fans envisioned. And, you know, you can understand some frustration.
Yeah. And in a city where the Red Sox are also not burning any cash, I can imagine the frustration is building up amongst Boston fans. And you can kind of compare it, well, maybe not compare it to Jerry Jones saying we're going all in and the Cowboys not signing anybody. But, you know, what struck me when Gerard was signed as the head coach and I watched his press conference, the fact that he very much presented himself as somebody who is in a position to grow young talent. But obviously, you still need weapons, still need to be able to compete, you still need guys in a dressing room. So for you, before we reach the draft area, what do you think is the two main areas that the Patriots need to find big names in, make a statement, find top players so they can go forward and maybe not challenge for the division? We might be a year or two south of that, but at least be pretty strong when we come against the Dolphins and the Bills.
So beyond quarterback, because I think they're going to draft a quarterback at three. We can dive into that a little more later. But the other two huge like areas that I think there are wide receiver. Like wide receiver room still needs a number one. If you get a number one, then all these other guys kind of slot into roles that they should be, where like Kendrick Bourne coming off an ACL, KJ Osborne are like two, three-ish guys. You have Pop Douglas who can play in the slot. And, you know, if you have a number one, I think your depth chart looks so much better than it does right now. The other one's left tackle. I have no idea who's going to be protecting the quarterback's blind side this year. Trent Brown left in free agency. I think that was probably a smart move because it really looked like he just quit on the team down the stretch last year. I think he needs to go a different direction there. But they didn't sign anyone. You know, Tyron Smith goes to the Jets. Jonah Williams comes off the board. And Patriots haven't done anything. So I don't know who your starting left tackle is right now. And I think that's a huge hole that you obviously have to fill.
I think at the end of last season, it was quite clear that there was a large gap between the quality of the offense and the quality of the defense. And that wasn't just in terms of coaching. That was in terms of the players that were on the roster as well. Are there any kind of particular gaps that that need to be sort of defensively in free agency that you probably can't fix in the draft? Or are the Patriots solid enough they can kind of build on it and focus their money on offensive talent?
I think they're pretty solid there right now. And to the point where you could make a luxury signing if you wanted to, where as of this recording, Stephon Gilmore is still on the market, right? I think Stephon Gilmore makes all the sense in the world to bring back to New England, not just because he could still play at a pretty good level, but he's the perfect mentor for Christian Gonzalez. You know, you have this young quarterback who could be a star moving forward, and Gilmore is a tape junkie. He is a film room guy. He is the ultimate professional, goes about his business so well that he's running routes better than receivers sometimes because he knows what's coming because he always does his homework. I think if you pair him with Christian Gonzalez, even for a year, and Gonzalez sees the way Gilmore works, I think you're going to get better at two positions right there. So I think an addition like that could make a lot of sense, but ultimately there still aren't like major holes in the defense. Another luxury signing could be Justin Simmons, who's still in free agency. If you want to spend a little more and get like a more of a center fielder, free safety, I think he could be helpful there. So there are additions they could make there, but I don't think it's as dire as things are on the offensive side of the ball by any means.
I'm going to move on to the draft there for a little bit, because I think one of the big things that has been talked about is the fact that the Patriots have this number three pick. This is a great opportunity to maybe pick a top player, probably a quarterback, but the Patriots being the Patriots, they have a long record of trading down so they can kind of bulk up their picks rather than picking high. You know, where there is, I guess, not expectation, but a belief that it is possible that the Patriots might trade out of three in order to improve their draft stock elsewhere. And it particularly raised eyebrows during the week when the Minnesota Vikings traded to get the 23rd overall pick from Houston. And they're also sitting on the 11th overall pick. And there was some talk about maybe that they might package those two together in order to get at 3, 4, or 5 from one of those teams in the first round. Do you think the Patriots are considering that? Is that something that you think they will do, or do you think they're pretty certain to, or maybe not certain, but pretty likely to use their third overall pick?
I don't think they want to trade down with Minnesota. If there's some sort of godfather offer that, you know, blows everything else away, then I think they'd be foolish not to listen and not to make a move. But I do really think they want to pick a quarterback at 3. And even in trading down, so now Minnesota has those 2 first-rounders. I don't think that's enough to get the job done. You know, if they wanted to throw a first-rounder in next year or two, then if you're the Patriots, I think you really start listening, because I think there's a pretty decent chance that Minnesota isn't going to be a top-tier team, and that, like, inherently you'll have a high pick again next year. Patriots are looking at a rebuild. They'll probably have another high pick. So if they threw a third first-rounder in there, then I think you start to really listen. But I don't think that they want to I don't think they want to move down the board. I think they want to take a quarterback at 3.
And if they do take a quarterback at 3, are we expecting it to be Drake May? Because I know we weren't quite sure whether 2 or 3, where would Drake May go and where would Jaden Daniels go? And I think over the course of the combine weekend, it seemed that Jaden Daniels' stock rose, that the Commanders might go for him instead. Is that the way we are expecting these things? And do you think the Patriots would be happy with Drake May, or were they kind of hoping for Jaden Daniels to be skipped on and then to land in New England?
I think they're internally, I think they're split on the two of them, where I think there are some that like one, some that like the other. But either way, ultimately, I think you're happy with one of those guys if they fall to 3. Well, one of them inherently is going to fall to 3, right? When Caleb Williams goes 1, and then you're at the mercy of the Commanders there, where whoever they take, you know, you get the other guy. But I still think you're getting a top-tier quarterback there. And it's interesting that J.J. McCarthy has started to make his way into some of these conversations, where we actually had Mel Kiper on our pod yesterday, and I asked him basically just like, how has this happened? How has J.J. McCarthy gone from someone that Kiper didn't even have a first-round grade on, like, early in this process, to like, well, could one of those teams pick him in the top 3, or maybe he gets picked at 4? How does this happen? And he said he's just such a tough evaluation because at Michigan, he didn't have to do anything, or he didn't have to do a whole lot. It's not that he didn't have to do anything, but he didn't have to do what all these other quarterbacks did because those teams were so stacked. And then it's all just in the eye of the evaluator. Well, it's like, could he have done that? I don't know. He didn't do that, but he might have been able to. And that's when you really get into the mixed evaluations. But at 3, I think the Patriots are ultimately still going to take May or Daniels, whoever's on the board.
Yeah, it's an interesting point around J.J. McCarthy. It's like around the time of the Rose Bowl, he's a possible second rounder, then he's a first rounder, then he's a top 10 pick. Maybe the Giants wanted him. It's just, like, right. I don't know how this guy keeps climbing up the ranks. So I don't know. And then you have people talking, oh, maybe the Patriots should take him because, you know, it'd be great to have a former Michigan or have a Michigan man coming in after how well the last Michigan guy did. It's just, I don't know. It's I'm with you on that. I don't get it either. I'm not quite sure what he's done to really be a star in comparison to even the Bo Nix or Michael Penix is the type of guys. You know, they're guys who have had to run their offense a little more. So,
and with McCarthy too, he feels a little almost like Mac Jones coming out of Alabama, right? Where he won a national championship there and he did everything they asked, but then ultimately gets the league and is more limited than other guys. You know, that's just kind of how it is. Where in college he did everything right, but at a certain point, you have to evaluate what the player is going to do at the next level too.
Yeah, very good. And on the Mac Jones point, I think one of the arguments before this free agency period started for the Patriots to go for a veteran quarterback as opposed to using the number 3 pick is the fact that their last, you know, first rounder was Mac Jones, somebody who had early promise but got mismanaged. And between, and I think it's in equal parts down to the coaching and the player himself, there was a dip in quality over the 2023 season. So do you think that now that the coaching element has changed, that the Patriots setup is a better setup for a young quarterback to go into? Because I know there's a lot of pressure on quarterbacks, he says, to be an instant hit. And we've been talking about that with a lot of the guys who were drafted in the year that Mac Jones was drafted, they're being dropped. Trevor Lawrence being the only one who's still around. And even then, he had a tardy first season. Well, the Jaguars had a tardy first season, not necessarily him. But he's shown himself to be a good talent. So we're waiting for potentially a number 3 pick to come in and play quarterback in New England. A market that's tough, a fan base that's tough. You know, is that a place where the new coaching system can foster and can bring up a good quarterback? Or is it still going to be pretty tough?
I think it'll be easier for whoever this next quarterback is. And I think Mac is a big reason why. I think even like Jerod Mayo obviously wasn't coaching offense, but he saw everything that Mac went through. And like the last few years have basically been a blueprint. The last two anyways in New England have been a blueprint on what not to do with a young quarterback, right? From the receivers, the offensive line, Matt Patricia calling the offense, and then giving him three coordinators in 3 years, and everything was just kind of a mess there. And Jones isn't without blame either. You know, he's culpable too, but it's a situation where he was essentially like set up to fail, and he did fail. And that's just, you know, how he ends up getting traded to Jacksonville for a six. But I think because that happened to Jones, they're going to be really patient with this next quarterback, which is why I think they signed Jacoby Brissett to the bridge deal that they did. So you don't have to rush him in. He can play when he's ready. And I think the fan base is also really cognizant of that now after seeing Mac fall flat, is that, okay, you need to do things differently with a young quarterback. You need to be patient with him. You need to like put him in the right scenario. And because of that, I think the fan base is pretty, you know, at this point, I think they realize that it's going to be a longer rebuild. It's just the nature of where the roster's at. They're coming off a 4-13 season, where the other thing was when Bill was around, they had never bottomed out like this. So I think the expectation was different, you know, with Belichick running the show. Now that they've been as bad as they were last year, I think everyone realized that, like, there's a hill to climb here.
And just before I let you go, when we are looking ahead to the next couple of years at the Patriots, I think it's quite clear that obviously the next year or maybe the next 2 years, I don't think it'd be surprising if the Patriots don't make the playoffs this year and probably not next year as well. But how long do you think that the coaching staff and the team can ride the patience before people start getting a bit itchy? You know, how long are we expecting this rebuild to go, and how long can Jerod Mayo last if playoffs aren't reached?
That's the million-dollar question. It becomes more complicated when you have an 82-year-old owner, you know, where there's a little more urgency there inherently. Like, that's just how these situations work. But I think that 2024, it's going to be a rebuild year. Like, I think everybody knows that. I think they want to be competitive. I don't think they're going to be a winning team. I don't see that happening. I think next year, 2025, is the year they have to kind of start getting back into the mix. They have to see a young quarterback take a step forward. They have to, you know, be competitive. I don't even know if that means a playoff berth, but in 2025, if they go, you know, 9-8, 10-7 and miss the playoffs, as long as you're seeing upward projection, then I think you get more patience with that and it keeps moving that way. But ultimately, I think this is a multi-year thing that you're looking at here. It's just where the roster's at right now.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to at least seeing what kind of guys come out of the draft and having hope that in the future they can blossom into a great team. But for now, Chris Mason, thank you very much for taking the time out to join us.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
It's anything good. Oh, yeah.